I'm excited about this one, Bailey. I mean, there's strategy, there's aliens trying to communicate.
Yeah, there's manipulation of children.
Yeah. We just have to talk about it, and I'm so excited. Wait, Bailey. Shh. What was that? Was someone trying to communicate?
I don't know.
Shh. I'm Chaney.
And I'm Bailey.
And this is Two Sisters Present
America's Sweethearts. You need me to introduce it, yeah?
Yes, please.
All right, so this is the podcast where we explore the work of women in film through their catalog of films, and we explore them by the genre of those films.
One day, this will be very succinct. But until that day, you're going to have to bear with us.
We're starting a new series that is focused on Viola Davis, and we are both very excited to be exploring her movies.
I am so, so, so excited to get started on Viola Davis because I've seen a few of the seasons of How to Get Away with Murder. I've seen the movie Doubt, which was one of her, I think, her first big breakout roles. I've always been a big fan of hers, but I haven't seen a lot of her films, so I'm just so excited. And
I'm like you, I haven't seen a lot of her movies, and I think most of that is because she's mostly in dramas, and I don't really go out of my way to see the dramas.
Mm-hmm.
But I have watched How to Get Away with Murder, and she is amazing in that. I'm pretty sure she's won several awards.
Oh, I think she has. Well, I mean, we have seen her in a few other things where she's played small little bit roles, like...
Yes.
Disturbia, where she plays
Kate
a cop.
Kate Leopold.
Where she plays another cop.
Uh-huh.
So we've seen her in little things, but I'm so excited to see her really show what she can do. So I randomly picked the category of family, and in this series, which is Viola Davis, we picked Ender's Game. Yeah.
You picked Ender's Game.
You're right. I picked Ender's Game because there's not a whole lot of family films that Viola has been in. I picked rom-com / comedy and family. Those are not her her biggest.
It's a challenge.
Yes.
To find something that fit the genre. Yeah.
And although Ender's Game like has a lot of kids in it and the energy is really, really high and there's lots of fun, the content isn't what I would really say is for children.
Well, I mean, it's heavy.
It's heavy.
He's my brother.
Okay. I don't know whether I should give you any notes right up front. I'm supposed to do my 5-point criteria, you know.
Uh-huh. I could tell you did your work, so it's okay to feel proud, Janie. You can feel proud.
Thank you. I do. I feel so proud. I did my work. I found more than 5 facts, but I'm only going to give 5. You're welcome.
You know what? If you give more than 5, I'm not going to, like, tisk-tisk you.
You may not tisk-tisk me, but I will erase me, so...
Oh.
Editing is a thing. Anyway, movie time?
Yeah, let's do it.
Movie time. All right. So, Independence Day. I mean, Ender's Game.
I half wonder if that was intentional or a complete flub.
Oh, it was intentional. Because as the movie begins, it's this battle scene between aliens and humans, and you see this one fighter jet going up, and it goes straight into the mother alien ship. It explodes, and then... I just assumed that all of the other ships kind of fell by the wayside, which we find out later
right,
on. That's
right.
What
that
happens.
That is what happens at Independence Day. Oh my gosh. I did not catch that. I knew it seemed familiar, but I was just like, oh, that's just the way that people take alien ships down.
So, and I know that this book was written before that movie came out, but still. Also, the alien, I know that it's like a praying mantis bug type thing, mm-hmm. but really it kind of looks like the alien from Independence Day too. Except
okay.
The aliens from Independence Day were black.
I mean, I actually found these bug aliens to be kind of beautiful.
the mother was. We don't know what the other ones looked like.
Yeah, the only ones we saw was the mother and then the simulation.
Right. So, which the simulation was probably a simulation of the mother. So, for all we know, the drones could be the aliens from Independence Day.
Sure. Yeah, they could.
Well, I have one other tie-in that this movie is the same movie.
What's the other one?
Let me find it. Hold on. Boop, boop, boop. Do, 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 do. Okay.
I mean, there's no one standing on top of a building with some big posters saying, take me home.
The only other connection I have, and we'll talk a little bit more about this later when we play our who was going to play what role originally. Back a long, long time ago in the 90s, Card, who is the man that wrote the film Orson Scott Card.
Yeah.
He suggested that Will Smith play the role of Maser Rackham.
Oh.
Will Smith was in both movies. In my mind. So
he could have been, instead we had Ben Kingsley.
Oh, he was so good.
Yeah.
He was really good. Okay, but we're getting ahead of ourselves. Okay.
Okay. So, anyway. Oh, yeah. Before we start, we should probably start every episode this way, just in case anyone is tuning in for the first time, that if you haven't seen this movie, we will spoil it.
Absolutely.
There is no way that we're gonna be able to talk about these movies without talking about what happens in them. And the ending of this movie is really important. It's what makes the whole movie, really.
You know, here's the thing. We're not going to give you a synopsis every time. Sometimes we might. We might walk through scene by scene. If, you know, we feel like there's some merit to each scene that we just want to comment on. But a lot of the times, you're not going to get a full synopsis. So it's best that you watch the movie or read a synopsis. Whatever floats your boat, man. But we're not going to do that job for you. You have to do some of the work.
Yeah. But I mean, if you are totally okay with just listening to a couple sisters gab about a movie that you've never seen and that just satisfies your curiosity in that film, we're happy to have you.
You know what? You might be my favorite type of listener.
You want to give that one listener your digits?
Hey, you, I'm talking specifically to you.
You know who you are.
You know who you are. And you can email us at twosisterspresent@gmail.com. I will look for that email, you. Okay. All right. So the whole beginning is Independence Day, and I was fully expecting Bill Pullman to make his very heartfelt, empowering speech to bring the whole world together to fight these aliens creatures. Aliens creatures. But instead, we get the amazing Harrison Ford, who is in charge, which I think he was wonderful in this. And to quote Viola Davis, so I found this this video interview of her. And the girl that was interviewing was like, how did it feel to be acting with the Han Solo? Was it intimidating? And she goes, awesome. Indiana Jones. I mean, I love Star Wars. Star Wars is great. But as we've covered, I am an Indiana Jones girl.
Oh, absolutely. Me
too. I mean, I may not know what order those movies come in. So I was like, yes. Okay, she's an Indiana Jones girl. She said that it wasn't anything that he did, like not being able to separate him from his other roles. It was not anything that he did. He completely embodied the roles that he plays. It's just her view of him. Mm-hmm. So I just love that she was in awe of him. I love that. Because if ever I got to be in a movie, like even with just, you know, a guy that we see in commercials, I'd still probably be a little nervous. So especially being with one of the greats like Harrison Ford, who has made so many iconic roles, I would be very, very intimidated. So it's nice to know that someone as profound and great as Viola was also kind of in the same boat a little bit.
Yeah, I've learned that I don't like meeting famous people. It's not fun. I clam up and I do not represent myself well, and it's just really awful.
Yeah. So we have Harrison Ford. Do you want to play the guess who might have played this role game?
Okay.
Okay. I told you about Will Smith maybe playing Maser Rackham, but this was all just Card suggesting things. This was not anything that was actually a possibility. It was just in his mind.
It was his dream team.
His dream team. Yes. His dream team. So this script had gone through several rewrites. It took...
Yes.
It took almost 3 decades to get this into a movie.
That's quite a production hell.
Yeah. He wrote several scripts himself, but ultimately it was... Oh, what is his first name? Boop, boop. I don't remember. The guy that ultimately ended up directing it, his last name is Hood. He directed a lot of other really famous movies, but I'm sorry, that didn't fall under my 5 facts, so...
So everything else is just out the window as far as...
Exactly.
...being important.
It's not really pertinent to this fact, so...
Well, I mean, we are here for Viola Davis, so everybody else can just go to bed.
Take a nap. I am not going to waste my 5 facts giving you details about other movies. That's, you know, silly.
Or about even who directed the film. Who cares, right?
Silly! Silly stuff! So, ultimately, it was the guy that ended up directing it. Last name Hood.
Robin.
I really wish I had written his first name down. That was really quite silly of me. Okay, but anyway, it was... Ultimately, Hood's script that was produced, and Card said that it was 100% of Hood's script, but he was on the producing side of it. So he still had some say over things. But originally, when back before Hood was even involved, Card wanted a dry comic to play the role of Hiram Graff, which is what Harrison Ford played.
Jerry Seinfeld.
Wait for it, though.
Oh, okay.
He also wanted to change the gender of the character.
Okay.
So you're looking at a female dry comic of the 90s, the late 90s. Do you want to guess?
Roseanne?
Close. Rosie O'Donnell and Janine Garofalo.
Wow. I think she could do it.
Which one?
Oh, wait, who was the other one?
Rosie O'Donnell and Janine Garofalo.
Oh, I don't know who that is.
Oh, she's great. She was in Romy and Michelle's High School Reunion, but anyway.
Okay.
So you would have a comic playing one of the most serious roles in the movie, which I think is really, really funny that that's what he had in his brain that he wanted.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
It's not at all what I would have thought that he would want for that part.
No, because I don't see it as a humorous role at all.
No, no. I mean, there is some moments where Harrison Ford brings some levity to it, but it's not...
Barely. Yeah. I'm thinking of that one moment. I'm like, we'll talk about it later.
But it's still not, yeah. Like, what? But they did change the character's gender for the Doctor, which is what Viola ended up playing. In this interview, the video interview that I watched, the interviewer was like, did you feel like you had to play up that femininity? It's a female that lives under the sea. Femininity. Femininity. And she was like, you mean like pushing my boobs up? No, I really didn't feel like that was necessary.
What a great response. Oh, I love her.
I know, I love her so much. But she was like, no, I did play up the nurturing and the motherly aspects of it. So one more thing that she said before we like get back into the movie was about all of the kids, because this is a very heavily...
Yeah, it's a very young cast.
It's a very young cast. So she asked, you know, how does she feel about these kids that were in the cast with her?
Mm-hmm.
And she said, they were peers. I didn't see any young people on that set. They had all the confidence that I was missing as a kid. If I were a child in a movie and an adult gave me that kind of respect...
Yeah, I'd be over the moon.
Over the moon.
I bet I love you forever. I like you for always.
I love that book. That's a good one. So anyway, yeah, so she loved her cast. She thought everybody was great. Everybody gave 110%. And that's all I have to say about
that.
That. I mean, this is a very small role for Viola. Oh, by the way, that was on popsugar.com.
Cite those sources, girl.
Yeah. I'm not going to do it often, so
Well, again, you know, just give yourself a little pat on the back. You should feel proud.
You never forget to tell me to pat my back.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's not a whole lot of things that revolve around Viola Davis because it was a small part for her. And this movie doesn't really focus on that character very much.
Right.
So I wanted to just start off with the Viola stuff.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we could talk about her performance a little.
Oh, absolutely, we can. I just mean, like, as far as my five facts go.
Oh, right. Yeah. Oh, of course. You've got more facts.
I have more facts, but
I was not keeping track on my hand.
Anyway, sir, I'm going to go ahead and jump into the movie now because that was all that I had for facts about Viola.
Okay.
Now we can just talk about the movie, and I may throw in some facts here and there when it's relevant to what we're talking about.
Gotcha.
If that's cool with you.
Yeah, cool with me.
Great.
Is it cool with all of you? Great.
Okay, so we move into all the kids that are trying to save the world by stratagem.
Uh-huh.
Because apparently kids' brains think faster when it comes to strategy than it does for adult brains. They rely on the brains of the young.
I think it's also a matter of, conditioning when it's young and preparing and training when you're young. You know, your skills are already greater. Just like learning a language when you're younger, it's so much easier. So, like, they're already molding these children to fight the wars. And that's, like, their main experience of life.
Mm-hmm.
This movie is set in a dystopian future. And I don't think that that's ever really made clear because we are with the kids the whole time. But, you know, there's, like, all little sprinklings of it. I mean, the fact that the children are militarized and then they say stuff about how they had to ask permission to have a third child.
Cullen is the third.
Yeah.
But also, Cullen is brilliant, just like Ender. So, you know, maybe there's something to say about a third child.
Right. Well, I wondered if, because it's been so long since I read the book, so I don't really remember if this was actually defined in the book, but I wonder if parents or spouses are assigned.
Oh, maybe. I mean, I didn't read the book, so I don't know.
Well, because later, I know this is skipping far ahead, but Harrison Ford's character compares the children to horses and says, I know a thoroughbred when I see one.
Yeah.
So it makes me feel like this dystopian future is all kinds of effed up.
Yeah. It's not a world that I would be eager to be a part of.
Mm-mm. But, you know, we don't really know all that at the beginning. We just know that there is this enemy. And the children seem to be in school, you know, learning about this adversary from the stars.
And they have no privacy. They have this little monitor that lives in their neck that can read their minds and is like a internal video camera.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which, when he has his removed, the nurse is like, this won't hurt a bit. And then he cries in agony and you see this bloody mechanism coming out of him. And I was like, oh, she lied.
Well, I think that that's really telling just how most people see children, especially the children in this academy. They don't really see them as children. They see them as a product.
Yeah.
Or a tool.
Mm. It hurt me. Okay.
I think we should talk about the fight that he gets in.
Okay, cool.
So he has his monitor removed, and this bully, who is unhappy with Ender beating him in a simulation, comes to have another interaction with him, but this one physical. And Ender, just like he does in the simulation, figures out what setting he's in and
uses his surroundings
in a way that the enemy does not expect. And once the kid's on the ground, he just keeps beating him. Because in his words, he didn't want to just win that fight. He wanted to win all future fights.
Yeah, beating him into submission, if you will.
Right, which is important because of where Ender ends up.
Yes, he just wants people to leave him alone. Let him do what he needs to do.
Well, he always gives them a chance to walk away.
Oh, yeah, he does. He tries to be fair and diplomatic.
Well, he gives them a chance because he knows what the outcome's going to be. Because he knows how to play the game.
Well, the very, 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 very first thing we see before Independence Day, we see the quote, and I'm not going to say it correctly, but it's like, as soon as I learn how to defeat my enemy is also the moment I learn to love them.
Mm-hmm.
So he gives them a moment to walk away because he does care for them.
Right.
Because he knows that he's going to win.
Right. Well, he has a sister, Valentine, who is too compassionate for the program, and his older brother, Peter, who is too violent, and he is somewhere in between. But Peter scares him. I think Peter scares him about that side of himself, and Valentine acts as this anchor because he does not want to lose himself to that violence, even though it exists in him.
Yeah.
Which the name of, what's her name, plays Valentine?
Abigail Breslin?
Yes. I love her and everything. And it's so funny, like when she, when
are you clicking her, something?
Sorry. Yes, I had a pen in my hand. I'm
Stop
sorry.
It.
Sorry. Okay, so Abigail Breslin, you know, because it's not long after we're introduced to her that he's whisked away into the program, whatever it's called, elite training. And I thought, like, wow, it's crazy that they cast her because, you know, he's almost immediately whisked away to the elite boot camp. And, you know, I thought, like, are we going to see her again? But then we do, and she is a significant role, even though her screen time is very, very small.
I was pretty surprised that she was in it as well because, you know, she was one of the bigger childhood actors at the time. So mm-hmm. It was really surprising that she was in it for such a small period of time. But the only thing that I can really make sense of that is that they were always intending for this to be a success mm-hmm. and that it was going to either become a TV series or they were going to make more films out of it. So it really didn't matter whether she had a lot of screen time or not because she was going to be a reoccurring character in mm-hmm. all of the films or the entire series. But of course, the success of the movie was not what they wanted.
It was not.
They spent a lot of money. They had a very substantial budget and they spent every penny pretty wisely for what they needed to make mm-hmm. for this film because, of course, it was a spectacle. Mm-hmm. The war room alone
probably was what most of their budget went to. So they recorded in Louisiana, but they also used an empty warehouse in NASA to film.
They also had an astronaut come in and talk to them about zero gravity and what that feels like. They made these... they invented these new kind of cranes to harness them up to help them fly, essentially. And the costumer invented a new kind of fabric for their war suits. And so they spent a lot of money. They spent between $110 million and $115 million. And worldwide, they only grossed $125 million. So they made a teeny tiny profit on this gigantic budget. So it was not exactly the success that they were looking for.
A little bit of profit. Well, at least it didn't completely bomb. I expected it to bomb.
Well, it was actually considered one of the biggest flops of that year.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so I know, the little bit that I know is that Orson Scott Card did not, he refused to make this movie because he didn't feel like there could be an adaptation of his book that was worthy of it. And I assume that he finally relented because he thought the technology was there. But
from what I have read, and I could be wrong, but from what I read, it wasn't necessarily that the technology was suddenly there. It was more that one of the bigger aspects was that Ender's inner monologues were so important to propel the plot along. And he was not sure how that was going to happen because he didn't want just a voiceover happening the whole time that didn't really seem to make sense. It seemed out of place. And he wrote several scripts over the period of, you know, 30 years. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't until Hood came around with his script where Ender's inner monologue was actually portrayed through his letters to Valentine.
Ah, yep. Okay. All right. Well, then I was wrong. But I think, because I was thinking about it, because I honestly, the movie is fun. I can see why it didn't do well. And I think that the main thing, because, like, it's a great story, and I think everyone acted well, and there was definitely some stunning visual stuff going on. But I think that it's one of those books that probably would have benefited in where television is now, where like they break down a book into a season. And then there's all the other books that come after this. So they could have, you know, done the whole Game of Thrones kind of thing. But I just felt like there were, we just kept seeing like moments of time that kept skipping to the next moment in time. And it was just like to give us impressions of this progression. But in this, at the same time, we had this sergeant that said he would never salute Ender because he would never be a captain. And then it seemed like 3 days later, he was saluting him. I mean, that's what it felt like.
So that was one of the problems that they had, was because they always had the intention of making this a bigger thing, they included a lot of what happens in Ender's shadow into this book, or into this movie, which Ender's shadow has a lot to do with Bean. And so that's why you see more of Bean in this than you normally would. Mm-hmm. And they also changed some stuff with Petra and made her a bigger role than she would have been. I don't know. Also, that was one of my favorite parts, was when Ender is first going to camp and he's late to getting on the ship. And Bean goes, "You're late." And he goes, "Well, I couldn't help it.
It was beyond my control.
It was beyond my control. Hi, I'm Ender." And Bean goes, "What kind of name is Ender?" And and then he goes, "Well, what's your name?" "Bean."
Yeah.
"You're not one to talk, Bean."
Yeah, right. Although it's a cute name.
It is a cute name. "Not worth a bean," is what he said. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, while we're in that scene, though,
yeah,
real fast, I just wanted to bring up the joke, you know, the... the funny thing that happens in that scene.
Hilarity.
And you can't see this, but I'm doing like huge air quotes when I say funny and joke.
I don't know what you're talking about, Bailey. That was a true knee slapper.
It was an observation, not a joke.
No.
I can say with authority that... it was not funny.
No, it was...
this is, like, in zero gravity, there is no right way up. Ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha Yeah, but still, I don't know. Like Harrison Ford saying it is funny. And all of y'all are stupid except for Ender.
Yeah, no one has any brain cells except for Ender, apparently.
Yeah, I was just like, this is, no.
And humor is not, I mean, yes, humor is an indication of intelligence. But just because you're funny doesn't mean that everybody else, if you don't have a sense of humor, it is not an indication that you're not smart.
Right. Yeah.
Just because they didn't find it humorous doesn't mean that they didn't, that they aren't smart.
Well, there is no standard for humor.
No.
Everybody finds different things funny. That really aggravated me. I was like, that is not a joke. That is like saying the ceiling is up. Hey, why did you pause it?
Potty break.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Don't go too far. We'll be right back. Enjoying Two Sisters Present America's Sweethearts? Feel free to leave us a review.
Tell us what you love.
And if you must, tell us what you don't love.
I don't love mayonnaise.
I mean about the podcast.
Right.
Contact us through Twitter, Instagram, or email.
Find our handles on our website, www.twosisterspresent.com.
You can also join our Patreon with exclusive content and access to picking your own movie or artist for us to cover.
What? You can pick the next America's Sweetheart?
Sure can. Find out all the info at www.patreon.com/twosisterspresent.
Thank you and goodbye.
Later. Hey, Bailey.
Hey, what?
I think it's time for some sponsor appreciation. What do you think?
Sponsor appreciation time! Yay!
This series is sponsored by Lindsay from Lime Life by Alcone.
Lime Life started as a small store in the theater district of New York, selling all natural skincare and makeup products to starlets on the stage and screen. Very our brand.
Lime Life is Leaping Bunny certified, cruelty-free, organic and chemical-free without sacrificing its performance. And a major selling factor for Bailey and I, most of the products are certified gluten-free.
Yes, thank you for not trying to kill us. They're all about supporting women, sending funds to charities like the Women's Empowerment Initiative, helping women all over the world.
I can't say enough good things about this company, but what about the product?
Well, I've been using the One Drop Wonder Oil, and it's for fine lines and to rejuvenate collagen in the skin, along with addressing other skin imperfections. And I have to say, I got my very first sunspot, and I've been using that every day, and it's already faded.
That's incredible. I love this stuff. And for the people with sensitive skin like myself, the charcoal and tea tree oil soap is gentle yet hydrating.
And it smells so good.
Oh, so good. This company and its products really speak for themselves. You just have to give it a try.
Honestly, committing to a skincare regimen every day feels really good, and it's very pampering.
Visit their website at limelifebyalcone.com/LindseyHinkle27. That's LindseyHinkle27.
Or contact Lindsay for personalized care and finding the exact product that's right for you. Find her on Instagram at Linz27. That's LINZ27.
Thanks, Lindsay, for all the samples.
We are all about that Lime lifestyle.
Yeah.
Ready?
Oh, super ready.
3, 2, 1, go. Oh, so I think I interrupted your thought.
I don't remember.
About the series moving on with Bean.
You know, it doesn't really matter because I don't really know what I'm talking about because I haven't read anything. So as far as I know, there was some things that was in the second book that they put in the first movie so that it would be more cohesive when it went into
the series filming. That was inevitable, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So
because
anyway.
It was going to be a huge success.
That it wasn't. And I mean, I honestly think that this movie can stand alone. I don't think that it needs any more to it anyway. I can assume that he takes the little amoeba thing, what do you want to call it?
The egg.
The egg. The egg.
Yeah.
He takes the egg to another planet that's not colonized and he lets it live free. I don't need to really know any more than that. But anyway, going back to that scene, the moment where all of a sudden there's zero gravity and their hands mm-hmm. start floating up and they all start looking at their hands. I just imagine the director is like, okay, now raise your hands and act like there's no gravity in the room. Everybody just has
act like you're all drowning victims.
You're floating in water. It tickled me. It tickled me. Also, their yellow suits reminded me of my little yellow juke, and it made me very sad.
Aww, you want to tell that story?
Yeah, I do, because okay, I miss
it. I'm here to listen
okay,
to you.
Thank you for your support. So, a few years back, I totaled my car, which is a whole other story. I was driving on the freeway around 6:30, which is the cars are starting to move pretty fast at this point, but it's still pretty crowded. Mm-hmm. So you really don't want to get into a car accident at that time because the speeds are dangerous, but there's also so many people. Anyway, everyone was moving constantly, and then all of a sudden the car in front of me stopped, and I was too close to them. That was my fault. And so I put on the brakes, but I tried to swerve into the outer lane, whatever that's called, the median.
Mm-hmm.
That is? Yeah. And when I did that, I lost control of my car and slammed into the shoulder blockade. And when I did that, it then spun me around into traffic, into three lanes of traffic. And then I stopped right when a 18-wheeler passed in the lane right next to me. So if I had gone even like 3 inches further, you know, it would have been catastrophic.
That is terrifying.
But not one car hit me. It was, I did it to myself. No one else was hurt. It was just me. So I was able to get my car to the side. I don't know how, because one of my wheels was tilted completely at a 45 degree angle. So who knows? I had some angels looking out for me that day. But anyway.
That's scary.
Yeah, and ultimately, overall, I was unhurt. I had some bubbles in my lungs that popped up, but that was it, you know, ultimately uninjured. So, like, major blessings there. So I was in need of a new car, and I had seen this beautiful yellow Juke that was on display at Nissan. Yeah, Nissan Juke. And I knew right away, I was like, that's my car. That's going to be my car. Love at first sight. And I got in it and it drove exactly like I wanted it to. It was just everything that I wanted. So I got the car. It was perfect. Life was happy. My little yellow ladybug, my Starla 2 was her name. And I loved that car so much. And then Harvey hit and I lost her.
Oh, the hurricane.
Yeah. So Nick and I decided to go up to my parents' house, who live in Conroe, because they weren't expecting any flooding up there. And so, you know, we left our house and said, hopefully it doesn't flood, but, you know, we'll go to higher ground. Well, there were some issues with the lake, and they ended up not draining the lake at the time that everybody expected. And so all of the houses on the lake flooded. And I lost my car. Meanwhile, at our house back in Houston, we didn't flood.
So, dry as a bone.
Dry as a bone. We were in that little patch that got no rain. So, but we flooded at the Labor Day, or Memorial Day flood, like a few months later. So, but anyway, I lost my car. And they are not really making the Juke anymore, because I went to go get, to see if I could get it replaced. And they... It was out of, what is
commission?
The, not out of commission. They just aren't making it anymore, whatever that term is. Mm. And that was very, very sad. Huh?
No longer manufacturing.
Yeah, they're no longer manufacturing it. And so I was very, very sad, and I had to look for a new car. And I love my new car. It's teal and crazy and fun, but it doesn't give me it's that sunshine Starla happiness. Too. It's not Starla 2. This one's Ursula. She's great. No one can replace Starla 2. Anyway, that is what their jumpsuits reminded me of.
I completely forgot what we were talking about. Wait, what movie is this?
It's Aliens with Sigourney Weaver.
No, it's Independence Day.
Oh, right. That. Okay. No, Ender's Game is what we are talking about. Okay, so, all right, he gets to camp. We meet Sergeant Dapp. And I only remember his name because it reminds me of Tap. And every time he came on screen, even though his words and his tone said one thing, the sparkle in his eyes said, I'm about to sing you a song from a musical. So I could not take him seriously. And I was ready for him to bust out into a Tap number every single time he was on stage. Screen.
I feel like you were watching two movies simultaneously.
This movie just brought so many other shows into my brain. Uh-oh, the dogs are barking. Hold on.
That's okay.
Anyway, so yeah, Sergeant Dapp just made me happy when he said something and all of the kids laughed and he was like, does it sound like I'm joking? And I was like...
Well, I mean, they don't understand what is funny anymore because they're already told one thing that is definitely not funny was funny. So now, like, you know, they think that they're supposed to laugh at everything, maybe.
Maybe. And then when he left, he was like, do I make myself clear? At ease!
And then I pictured him sashaying away.
You were watching a different movie.
I was. I just wanted him to dance away. Okay. Anyway, anything, any thoughts? Moving on.
Is that the scene where Ender was questioning whether their emails were going out?
No, that was before that. That was just the first interaction.
Okay. Well,
actually, maybe when he said the last bit and then I wanted him to sashay away. That's Sasha.
So, sachet?
Yeah, it's a sachet.
Sassy away.
Okay, like the whole thing is controlled and manipulated because they want something specific out of Ender. And they're not telling him what, they only tell him what they think that he needs to know in order to become the thing that they want him to be, which is either Napoleon or Caesar, which I was like...
Those are not the two that you want to...
Well, I mean, you know, there really isn't any tyrant that you could compare him to that would be positive.
It's no, like... the person that they should have compared him to is Bill Pullman in Independence Day.
Yeah, a leader.
That's the a leader.
A leader, not an emperor or a dictator. You know, like, what?
No, there. A lot of their tactics with him made no sense to me. I mean, he's obviously a kid that needs some sort of love and encouragement, positive encouragement. And they were like, we gotta leave him alone and make sure that nobody, that he feels like no one can help him. I'm like, how is that gonna, this kid is not someone that thrives on isolation.
Well, Viola Davis's character does not feel that way.
Right, which, you know, her whole character... I wrote, one of my last notes was, I feel like her character is pointless because obviously her job means nothing to Harrison Ford. Every time she tries to do something, he's like, no.
I think it's to show what his ultimate goal is, to have that contrast.
I get it, but she never really had any wins. It was,
no.
Every time she tried something, she was knocked down.
Well, except the mind game.
Which, no, that still was, and in the end, he was like, erase the game.
Right, that's true. But she authorized it to begin with, and it wasn't taken away immediately.
You're right. So she got one thing in.
Which it seems that the mind game is how the, what are they called? Ferrix? Formix? The Formix were able to communicate with him. It was through the mind game.
So about that mind game, I love strategy games like that. I wouldn't have killed the guy. So I would have taken some of the cheese and I would have dipped it into the wine to see if it was acidic and, you know, maybe figured out that both of them were acidic and then not have died the very first time. Ender. Ugh. But honestly, I probably would have just taken the cheese because I love cheese.
Well, I think that the way that he responds to the game is very telling about where his mindset is, because he understands how to play the game because that is how he sees it. Like, he knows that there's a war, but so far it's not real. It is just succeeding in the game. And he knows that follow the rules, you lose. Choose violence, you win. And so that's what he does. And the doctor, she says, I've never seen anyone do that before. And of course, Harrison Ford is impressed because that is exactly what he wants to see. It's interesting because I think that the first time that he experiences the consequences of his mindset to always win, no matter what, is with the leader of the Salamanders.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember his name?
Bonzo. Which I kept wanting to call him Bozo.
Oh.
Because in the shower scene after the accident happens, he goes over and he says, Bonzo. But the way that he says it, it sounds like Bozo. Which is really unfortunate.
Yes. But those kind of scenes, I hate them. I hate that trope that you see in things where someone falls backwards and hits their heads on the edge of something.
Yes.
And it grosses me out every time. It's just so gnarly. So, yeah, so that's the first time that the consequences of the game become clear to him. And he understands, he's understood his part. He's understood that other people are holding the cards. And he's just learning how to play around the potential hand, you know? But, like, it's that moment that he wakes up and he's like, I don't want to do this anymore.
Well, do you want to know a little fun fact about that moment, though?
Yeah, please.
Apparently there was a lot of jokes that, like, practical jokes that happened around the soundstage.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them was that the guy that played Bonzo actually had to shave his head for that final take of his head being operated on. And the director thought that a funny thing to do was to go up to Petra, the girl who played Petra, with a black eye and say, that the actor was so upset he had to shave his head that he punched the director in the face.
What?
And she was so afraid at first, and then he was like, no, it's just makeup. I was like,
I'm sensing a theme here because the director is the one that wrote the script, right? So I just don't understand his humor. So maybe if we're wrong, let us know.
Yeah. You know, send us an email at Two Sisters Presents and I'll be looking for you.
Mr. Hood. Okay, so moving right along. I loved the line when they are learning. They're in school, I guess. I don't know. And the woman teacher is, like, explaining all of this stuff. She's like, come on, guys. This is basic rocket science.
Literally.
Literally. Okay. Now, speaking of that scene with Bonds of the shower scene, do you take showers facing the shower head or away from it?
Okay, so I face away from the shower head, but there was a period of time when I faced the shower head because I was traumatized by a trailer Bird on a Wire, because there's a scene that's in the movie and also in the trailer of the movie where a cockroach falls on Goldie Hawn's head from the shower faucet. And so that I was just so afraid that was going to happen to me. So for a very long time, I always faced the shower faucet for fear of cockroaches.
So I thought when you said you were traumatized by a film trailer, it was going to be from The Grudge. Because there's that whole section with the hand coming into the hair from the shower faucet. Anyway, when you said Bird on a Wire, I was like, what? That's the Goldie Hawn movie. Why was she... Oh, the roach. The roach from hell! It's just...
Yep.
Cockroach. Ew. I understand why that would traumatize you and why you would face the shower for a very, very long time. Moving on, the next part, after he leaves and he's like, I don't want to do this anymore, which we talked about. Valentine convinces him to go back. And then he graduates. It's graduation day, which all I heard in my head was, it's coronation day, which is from Frozen, in case no one picked up on that.
Oh, right. That was a very good princess voice, Janie.
Wait, thank you.
Yeah, I'm here for you.
I am the one true princess. If anybody listens to Memory Static, Bailey's other podcast, you'll find out I am the one true princess.
A little crossover moment.
Yes. So anyway, he graduates. He meets Maisel Rackham, which is Ben Kingsley, who is amazing. I mm-hmm. love his accent. I think it's New Zealand.
That sounds right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I love it. I think he does such a good job. But if we have any people who are listening that are from New Zealand, please tell us whether his accent is accurate or if I'm just a fool.
Or maybe he's from New Zealand.
He's not. He's from England.
Oh, okay.
I looked him up.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
You did your research.
Well, I guess you're rubbing off on me. Anyway, I would love to be able to do a New Zealand accent. I know it's like it's whiter, mm-hmm. whiter, I guess brighter, but I can say like a few words if I hear them, but fluently I can't do it, but I love it.
I would think it'd be a challenge, kind of like doing a Boston accent.
I love that accent. Not Boston. Boston's great too, but I love the New Zealand accent. I just wish I could do it. Anywho, so then he has his team, which is made up of all of the misfits, which just happens to be the team that he came in with. You know, no real newbies there, except for a couple of stragglers from, what do I always want to call it? The serpents, the salamanders.
Well, they'd have to pay more actors. And the budget was already pretty high.
Beep, bop, boop. So he has this team made up of everybody that he already knows. Great for him. So then Ben Kingsley tells him that he has to... Excuse me.
Bless you.
That his next form of training is simulation, playing games. And through those games, he'll find tactics to beat the whatever they're called. Formix?
Formix, I think. I wrote it down. Formix. Like, I didn't actually say it like that.
We can only try.
I'm just getting kind of delirious.
He's doing these simulations, and he fails at one, and he gets really reprimanded for it, which doesn't make sense because it's just a game, you know? It's right. The stakes aren't really that high for a game. Yeah, once you're in the real battle, those stakes are high. Lives are at stake. But
right.
It's just simulation. So anyway, they get to the Formex planet. Mm-hmm. And they have their ship that has the giant laser beam. And Ender is like, okay, well, we should do the same formation that we did when we all protected. I can't remember. Maybe it was Bean. They all protected Bean with their bodies in the battle room. And use their bodies as a shield so that whoever was inside got mm-hmm. to the other side, got through to where they could win. So mm-hmm. he's like, let's use that same formation. So they use all of the ships. They leave ships alone that can't do the maneuvers to protect them. They leave them unguarded. Those ships get blown up. And all the other tiny ships protect this laser beam until the laser can get into striking distance. And Petra pushes that button. The laser beam goes, it hits the planet, and it becomes a giant boom. Fireball.
Right, and they're celebrating, and all the people back in the war room are super quiet.
Yes, Ender turns around, he goes, I win! And then they all turn their backs. And he's like, what is going on? And then they bring the simulation back up, and you see the devastation of the planet.
Right. It's supposed to be the moment of triumph.
And slowly, the realization of what's going on falls over Ender, and he realizes that it was not a simulation at all, that it was real, and then confronts Harrison Ford, who is like, mm-hmm. yes, this was the battle, but you've ended the battle of all battles. We no longer have to worry about them. And it falls on Ender that he has now committed genocide against an entire species. Mm-hmm. Knowing that species has not attacked for 50 years. And that when they did have the opportunity to attack, they stood back. And he was like, I feel like they were trying to communicate. We didn't give them the opportunity to. And Harrison Ford is like, it didn't matter.
Yeah. He says, he throws Ender's words at him from the very beginning where he said, we fought this battle to win all future battles. And Ender says, the way we win matters.
Yes. Then they shoot him in the neck with something, which I didn't understand because he had already kind of calmed down at that point. He was just walking away and they were like, no, we're going to go ahead and sedate you. And so they sedated him.
Our hero.
Yeah. And when he wakes up, he realizes where he's supposed to go and what he's supposed to do and how the Formex was communicating the whole time. And he goes out into the desert on the planet, which has lower oxygen levels. And he meets the Formex mother, who there's only one left, and she's dying, but there's an egg. And so he then takes the egg, he gets permission to do whatever he wants because, you know, he's the hero of Earth, mm-hmm. and no one can tell him what to do anymore. So he takes the egg, and we don't know what happens after that. You know, it's the end of the movie. But I'm okay with it being the end. I'm okay with him trying to find a home for that egg and then leaving it at that. I don't really necessarily need more. It would have been fun. I did mm-hmm. enjoy the movie.
Yeah. I mean, as someone that hadn't read the book and didn't know what was coming, did it shock you? Or did you feel like it was leading there?
I didn't know that it wasn't a game. And it's pretty sickening to put that on a child.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they're like they are not at risk themselves, and they're putting others at risk. So like if he would have made different choices if he had known that there were people in those ships that they were sending off to die.
Which and Harrison Ford said, but those people died proudly, you know, fighting this fight. And he's like, but they didn't have to die at all. You know, Ender is so smart that he could have potentially come up with ways to do both. Maybe not.
Right.
Maybe not.
He was fighting the game according to the rules that he thought that he knew.
Right. But that's not the game that he was actually playing.
Mm-mm. It's so messed up.
Yeah, it's pretty horrific. Harrison Ford said, you're going to go down as a hero. And he said, I'm going to go down as a killer.
Yeah, as a monster.
Yeah. How can you live with knowing that you killed off an entire species? That's pretty, I mean, he's what, 13?
Yeah, a species that hadn't done anything to them for 50 years.
Right. Right.
I mean, it, for all they knew, the Formix might have come to Earth not realizing that there were, I don't know. I think it's like, this is going to get more into a subject that I'm not prepared to talk about, but like, they probably didn't know anything about the planet Earth.
Right. No,
I mean, and they didn't know about the animals that lived there.
For all we know, because we really don't know anything about what happened when they came, except that there was a battle. We honestly don't know whether the Formix just came into our atmosphere and the humans were like, oh, someone's in our territory. This is not okay. And started shooting before we even knew what the Formix were here for.
Because there are so many science fiction shows where aliens come and people don't know how. There's no, like, bridge of communication between the two. And people do not react well in those movies.
Right. I mean, if this was Independence Day, then yeah, the aliens started it. But if it's not, you know, it could be just that humans misinterpreted what the aliens wanted and viewed it as a threat from the beginning without even giving them the opportunity to tell us what they wanted. They are now no longer in existence.
Right. Where it does not reflect very well on the human race.
So ultimately, the movie ends pretty sad. It's not it's not a happy ending. A lot of heavy stuff. And that's why I was like, after I watched it, I was like, this isn't really a family film. Viola. But ultimately, I enjoyed the movie. It just, you know, was sad.
Yeah.
At the end. But I enjoyed it. It was fun. All of the battle scenes were a lot of fun.
Yeah.
The war room or battle room or whatever you call it. That's pretty much all I have.
Yeah. I mean, my final thought is that it should be re-explored as a TV series.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that you could jump off of this movie or you could just start fresh.
Right.
I mean, if what is his name? Orson Scott Card, is that his name? The guy that wrote this book.
Yes.
Orson Scott Card gives his permission, then I think that it would be good to do it as a TV series, especially if they want to explore all of the books.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. It was cool. It was fun. It was exciting.
Yeah, well, then what's next?
Well, like we said in the trailer for this series, we're doing things a little differently because we don't want to bombard you with drama after drama after drama.
So we went a little lighter with our first episode with Ender's Game, which still ended a little darker. But anyway,
all that means is that the rotation has changed up just a little bit. Bailey should have started the series, but I did instead. We're still alternating up until the end, and then Bailey will do the fan pick as well. So that means you get two of Bailey in a row. Yay! And she is starting with the movie Widows.
Oh, also, this movie, if you wanted to watch it, it is on Amazon for free with ads, or if you have Roku, you can watch it on Roku with ads. You can also purchase it too on Amazon, but if you
without ads.
Yeah, without ads. But if you want to go the free route, there you go. So anyway, that's what we have for this episode.
Whoopee!
What to do?
We are done.
Yeah.
Dunzo.
So be sure to check out our website and check out our Patreon if you wanted to be a subscriber. If you listen on Apple Podcast and like our show, please leave us a 5-star review. Reviews help us get into the algorithm, and that's how our podcast can get out to more people. So that would be amazing if you could do that for us. If you don't like our show, please email us and tell us what we can improve on. That's it.
Yes. All right. Next time, guys. We'll see you later. All right.
We'll see you later.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
This has been Two Sisters Present America's Sweethearts.
See you later.